so they had to live with the collective agreement. Yeah. Some of them learned to live with it, and some of them resented living with it, like they do today.
So, at that time, as the hotels were being organized, the small cafes became less important as a dues?
Yeah, they did. They diminished over a lengthy period of time. With the base of which the local once functioned on diminished slowly but surely over a lengthy period of time. Till today, the very thing that kept them going in those years don't exist no more.
Yeah.
The existence now of the culinary workers is founded in the hotel industry. See, they can walk in there and pick up like the Bay Shore. They can pick up 400 people, you know, one shot. Where in a cafe, what were you going to pick up? 23, 10, 12, you know. There were small numbers in the cafes, depending on the facilities, whether they had banquet facilities. And banquet facilities were not what you called a steady operation. They were functional. You know, somebody was going to hold a banquet, well, maybe you'd have 3-4 banquets a week.
Mm-hmm.
So there, where the banquets existed, then you had a major proportion of staff. But the smaller cafes usually ranged between, maybe 8, 10, 12.
Does that mean that most of the cafes lost certification or lost organization?
They changed ownership, and there just seemed to be the loss of...
Mm-hmm.
No, there was one big drive made in the 50s, and that was on the aristocrat hamburgers, you know, the aristocratic.
Right.
And the aristocratic, as you know, is a Supreme Court case. It's referred to often as the peaceful picketing. It was the first chain operation. Local 28, by the way, organized the aristocratic. And they spent considerable money in the Supreme Court in getting it. Where today it's often referred to as the operation that used peaceful pickets. And the ruling of the judge of that day, he set down how you could pick it, where you could pick it. In other words, if you were organized in one section of the chain, you could pick it another section of the chain, provided you limited your pickets.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ruling on the aristocratic. Now, through the aristocratic, a lot of unions started using the peaceful picket, but the peaceful picket became abused in later years because instead of going along with the formula that if you were organized in one part of the chain, you could apply on a restricted basis pickets on the other part of the chain. A lot of organizations, when they were organized in some place, they didn't organize nothing. They just dropped the pickets on and said, this place doesn't have an agreement with the local so-and-so, which was not really the ruling in the aristocratics.
I mean that they weren't using the picket to organize?
Well, they were just really, they would just drop a picket in front of the place and say, this operation doesn't have any collective agreement with local XXY, you know,
mm-hmm.
where the aristocratic ruling stated, before you could put this peaceful picket on and display such a sign, you had to be organized in another part of their operation.
Okay. This is very interesting. I've been trying to understand, you see, what the process was where the cafes and restaurants ended up leaving the union, you know, and nobody's been able to answer that near the
first. Well, how they wound up is because the membership became so great in the big operations.
Yeah.
And that these small restaurants, even like today, there's large turnover. The turnover is just the same. But to police a restaurant, man, you have to have a bigger staff,
mm-hmm.
because you got to go around the clock with it. And the turnover is so great that you have membership today and they're gone tomorrow. So it seems that the people that are in that area have just bypassed them for the large grabs, where maybe they should be picking them up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe this is the attitude that Sorwick takes, but Sorwick has never had the headaches of of police in these things, and they found this out when they got spread out. You know, when you get spread out, you've got to have large staffs to take small restaurants, because you got to go around the clock on them.
Mm-hmm.
Where a hotel, now you have checkoffs, you have employer deductions, you have employer collects initiations in these big operations. You don't have this, you have to be personally going around these places late at night, and maybe this is the way they got away from them. I don't...
Okay. It's okay. I just was.
Yeah,
just
well, I know what you're trying to get at. Why did they ignore him?
Yeah.
But you can't say they ignored him. They just took this. Well, let's say that they took the cream and left the.
Right.
That's okay. What it amounted to.
Okay. During the Second World War, were you working with the Union then at all?
No, I came after the war.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember people talking at all though during the war whether there were sort of changes in. The conditions within the industry because of the war?
Well, the industry was frozen.
Yeah.
The hotel industry was frozen, so was the restaurant industry. Any raises in the industry had to be applied to the wartime, what was it, the wartime measures?
Yeah.
Board or something. Yeah, if you wanted to raise during the war in the hotel industry or restaurants, you had to apply. It had to be by the employer, the union, and the government. And if they saw fit to give you a raise, well, then you got it. If they didn't, you didn't get it. There was no negotiations during the war era.
Right, okay. Was there organization then, though, in the industry?
Was the union there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That didn't interfere with the union any. It was just that there was no... Everything was frozen during the war.
After the war, were there people, like women coming into the cafes who'd been in war industry and because of that experience were more pro-union than maybe they would have been before?
It's always been a passing trade, restaurant industry. You get more steady culinary workers in hotel operations. Now, they have great turnover, too.
Right.
But major hotels, now with conditions, they have real good conditions. You know, they don't compare to industrial plants or nothing, but they have very good conditions. They have the best conditions in North America and British Columbia.
Right.
If you show them these agreements in the United States, they get sick.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
Were there also sort of differences within the union around race and racial minorities within
Never.
The union? No, okay.
Never. They, in the real early years, from the context of what I've read, there was, you know, on the Chinese end, but that's a way before my time.
During the 20s.
Yeah, 20s. They had it, you know, at one time, girls, were working in Chinatown, and then they prohibited that. Girls one time, you know, could work in Chinatown, and then the law stepped in and they prohibited the white girls from, or anybody outside of Chinese working in China.
Mm-hmm. During the 1940 period, were there many women who were active in the union?
Oh yeah, it was all women. It's all going.
And was there like an enthusiasm for...
Oh yeah, they were very active, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Emily Watts and May Ansel were very active, but they were in left field, you know. They were removed later on for communist leanings.
Yeah.
But I always, in fact, I was a trustee when they removed through orders from Cincinnati, and when I was with the vice president at the time, I stated that she may have communist leanings, but... if you take her out, who are you putting in?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were very enthusiastic workers. They spent a lot of time, and they kept the people interested. They had big women committees. They worked mostly through women,
mm-hmm.
May Ansel, and I must give them marks for being on the job. I was very much concerned of taking them out myself, but I didn't have no authority. I was just working there. But I was very much concerned because I believe that May Ansel and, in my time, and Emily Watts were the last of the big pushers in culinary organization. I don't think anybody, even today, has ever equaled the drive that they had. They had good drive, and they were consistent. They didn't only tackle the organizational end, they tackled the health end in cafes, in the interest of public, the cleanliness of cafes. Many times they made briefs, changed legislation pertaining to health in cafes. Well, they're active in the political field and the legislative field. And as I say, in my time, I don't think anybody has equaled their drive to bring members in than Ansel and Watts.
They would go out and see people constantly?
Constantly. They spent hours and hours on that job. Well, I couldn't keep up with them when I was younger than they were.
So
they were, well, they had their heart in it.
Yeah.
They had their heart in it. As to me, I haven't seen anybody ever replace them that showed the enthusiasm for raising the culinary worker.
So when they were removed, did that have an impact on...
I think it did. Yeah. I think that was the decline of the small restaurant from there on in, over a period of time, because the drive was no longer there. When they were removed, the Jack Price came in, a former alderman that used to be with the NDP party. It was Canadian Commonwealth. He was sat in the House for 7 years, undefeated. He became the business agent. That's who replaced me, Ansel and Emily Watts. And while he may have been a good politician, I don't think he was a good culinary organizer. And I believe that was the zero point where the decline of the small restaurant moved out of the grasp.
Do you think that, like, Ansel and Watts were particularly good organizers because they were women and had sort of a feeling of what these women were going through?
No, I think that their initiative in organizing was that they believed in what they were doing. And they believed in raising the condition of the woman worker in the trade. I believe it was sincerity on their part that they had their heart and soul into the job. They were there to do a job, and they were doing it.
Right. But could they sort of appeal to and take up the particular concerns of women? Like, do you think maybe women would be able to talk to them more easily?
I don't think that. I think they treated everybody very equal, any worker in the culinary. There, as I say, the majority were women, but I never saw any discrimination with Ansel. I never did like Ansel, but you got to give her marks. I never seen her discriminate against any grievance, whether it was a male. Or she did a thorough job for everybody.
Right. Okay. Did they try and, when did the union at that time try and take up some of the specific concerns that women might face? Like you were talking about this thing about working late hours. Was that one of them?
Oh, yeah, sure. They were right down there, both feet first. In fact, these Greeks used to roll out the carpet to these people. These people were on their tails all the time. If it hadn't been for their consistency and making them live up to the contracts, certainly the contracts would never have been adhered to, because these Greek operators, they tried every method to undermine the contract, but no way with this Watts. If they tried that, she'd hit him on it from a health angle or an inspector angle. She'd say, "You play with me, I'll play with you." So she didn't pull no fire with him. She hammered him.
Great. Okay. Maybe we should look at some of that, the material there, and you can tell me what.
Well, I just threw this together. This, you can have this. I don't know whether you get... They asked me to keep doing this paper, but I told them I haven't got time for it. No, I got it. This is the... this is these pictures.
Oh, yeah.
See?
1930s.
Yeah. This, you see, if you can identify these persons in the pictures, contact the Vancouver Mixer, but nobody ever did it. Now, the reason I'm giving you this one here is because Bill Stewart was with Local 28 in the early years. He was... Bill Stewart, who was later with the Marine Workers, and also with the BC Federation of Labor, and also very instrumental in organizing the Port Maritime Council, you know, the Waterfront Council. This is where he broke in, was in Local 28. This is where Barbara Stewart could fill you in quite a bit. Now, I worked with Bill on this article here, and you can go through the article. Outstanding fears that supported our amalgamation. And then you'll find out here. He touches on a lot of stuff in what you've been asking. I don't know whether you have this, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, well then you can have it. This is really the important one. He writes about the restaurant industry there, what we're talking about. These were the early, they had a much better, but this was the first two papers we did. I just give you this as an example. I don't think it will refer to anything, but this is the one you want to, you'll get material out of that one. This is what they have now. You can see the big advances that from these days, from the aggressiveness of these people that were in the early history of Local 28, the industry has progressed now that they have one of the major training schools in Canada. They train everything. They train in mixerology, front office desk administration.
Right.
They teach how to tap barrels, clean barrels, fix lines on ZAMs that dispenses beer. In other words, they provide training for every aspect in the hospitality trade. And they have there's where you may go over there. They have the big school on Hastings Street. You can introduce yourself, tell them you're doing something on it, and they may give you some dope in their training school.
Sure.
In fact, there's a lot of women go through this training school. Big portion of them are women.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, here's something you may be interested in. I don't know how you're going to get it off there. This Sylvia, this was the first woman that, when the law was changed, that women could work in the industry. She came down from the Inn of the North, and she put up a very strong fight. They wouldn't let her into the union here. So this is her here.
When did they change the law?
74, I believe.
Right, that was the human rights legislation.
No, it's 70.
70.
Okay. Yeah, around 70. I don't know how you're going to get off. Maybe I should give you the book and give me it back sometime.
No.
If you want to get some notes of it. But she was the first woman that ever came into the liquor industry.
Why did the union try and stop her from getting it?
Well, they didn't try to stop her. You see, what happened was the liquor was a closed shop industry. And they had what you were referring to a while ago, a closed shop, and they had a hiring hall condition. Now, when she came down, she came down on the basis of a traveling card from the Inn of the North. That was the hotel she worked at. And that was our other local, 835. And she had deposited the traveling card. And the traveling card had not been processed at the time. She put the traveling card, and the guy in the hotel wanted her to go to work. Well, there was no way she could go to work till her traveling card had been accepted. Now, if she had waited a few days, Miletich at the castle had wanted her, and we said, well, our traveling card has not been processed yet. So I don't know why she went on hotline and all this kind of stuff, but when they asked me on hotline, I said, well, I don't know what you're taking this up for. I think that you should have contacted us, because if you were to ask her, did we refuse her traveling card, she could only say no, that we accepted it. Now, if we accept her traveling card, then she's accepted as a member. She has the rights of a member. But what she wanted to do was to break all the closed shop principle. We had people that were had seniority that were on the board, and she didn't want to go onto the dispatch board. They don't have that no more, but at that time they had it. And she felt that she should be come down from then in the north. If you were waiting for a job, she felt that she should walk in over you, you know, and get the job, which was wrong. But she got the job. But she got it when her turn came. She didn't get it immediately like she thought she was going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the whole gist of the whole thing. But if she'd have waited a few days, well, she wouldn't have had any problems. I think after she got this write-up. Then she went in the hotlines. I guess she figured she was going to be a movie star or something. I don't know. But anyway, it wound up that good anyway. So I don't know whether this stuff is any good here. This is the Belmont Hotel staff, and these are men, guys. I don't think they're any good. Nothing here. This is all men in the liquor end. Mm-hmm. This is an old bar that was the Strand. That was the Strand Hotel.
That's quite old.
Yeah.
That's 1920s.
You want to use that one there? There's the, that was a Strand that was owned by Mr. Shaw in 1908. You can take it.
Is that a 1908
picture? Yeah. Yeah. You can have it if you want. Right. Keep that little note with it. I'll give you, there's a little clip there on the windowsill there.
Okay. Oop.
This is a financial report of the local in 1903.
Oh my.
Wouldn't that be surprising? You put that in, you know.
$2.52.
That's what they had in the bank. And of course, these are just letters again. You know.
Well, do you know what the defense fund was for? It's
well, the defense one would defense. Be probably, you know, it says your favor of September the 30th to hand contest noted. We're not positioned number of votes to board to warrant going ahead with the properties submitted for. It's just the joint board. Yeah, well, apparently the local joint board in 1914 had sat down and discussed that they were going to make an organizational drive. And the International Union has said that the board has sat down and they're quite prepared now to give $200 to the joint board to assist them in their drive. In other words, that's the total sum of monies they were forwarding them in that year to start organizing the Coventry workers. That was 1914. It was addressed to Mr. George Kernock, Secretary, Oakland Joint Board, Box 424, Vancouver, B.C. And it was October the 5th, 1914.
Right. Okay. In this period of the 1940s, were there any specific kinds of issues which women faced or raised in the union which dealt with, you know, problems that women would have, like having kids, you know, and this kind of thing? Nothing specifically. It was just general trade union issues.
Just general trade union issues. I never run across anything like that. If the women were raising kids, they were raising kids. Right.
Did the issue of equal pay come up at all?
Never.
No.
Because the ones that were working, they were working with equal pay. They were working a standard agreement.
Sure.
So.
Okay. Is there anything else that you think you'd like to say about that period of the union? Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you about was the organizing drive in New West. You were talking
in New Westminster? Yeah. Well, that was the in the early 50s too. I was designated by the International Union and I was put on loan to the Westminster local, which was Local 835. Now their charter was granted in 1939, and in reality they had never made any progress. They had maybe 100 people in the local, and maybe picked up the odd place here and the odd place there, and then traveled into the Okanagan and in a scattered manner picked up some hotel bar workers and some cafe workers. And as I say, in the 50s, everything was getting bigger at that time, you know, just like the expansion. It looked like an expansion in the next few years. So we were preparing for it, and we made our drive in the restaurants.
Right.
Westminster today has several restaurants. 40 has restaurants. You know, they have the very same kind of restaurants, but of course it's all merged to 40 now. But they have lots of contracts in restaurants in Westminster, which they used to have in Vancouver, but they don't have them in Vancouver no more.
Right.
Now, maybe you might take a study by talking to Pearl Wong. She can tell you all the restaurants. No, they in the Westminster Local, when they merged with the 16, which was formerly 676, when 16 and 40 merged, they were still operating these restaurants that we had done in the 50s, 835 was, and they're still operating them today. But they faded out in Vancouver, but they didn't fade out in Westminster.
When you organized in New West, did you find employer opposition there?
Oh, immensely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, of course, I told you, they, without me identifying themselves, they set up the Royal City Cafe as the test case. Mm-hmm. They knew if they could defeat us in the test case of the Royal City, they went right in the Supreme Court of Canada. And if we'd have got beaten that, we were dead ducks. But once we knocked off the Royal City, well, then the other ones said, well, if the Royal City, of course, the Restaurant Association would be behind the Royal City. Mm-hmm. We never had any positive proof, but we knew they were there.
Right.
Once we knocked off the Royal City and got certification, got a collective agreement, well, the other guys, they said, well, what the hell? If Royal City can't beat them, that's the major cafe.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't beat them, what the hell's the use of us tackling them? So the cafes just felt like wooden soldiers after that.
Right, and that was the one where they tried to challenge your certification?
Yeah.
What did the union do?
Well, the union at that, we notified the labor board who had issued the certification that we said, look, they're not challenging us. We didn't issue the certification, you issued it. And my idea in saying that to them was at the time was, if I was to go to court with it, I'd be paying the costs.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried this on them. I said, it's your certification. And they bought it. Well, once they went to court with it, well, they were stuck with the court costs. It was their certification. But from that case on, they changed the law.
They never again bit
twice on it. Which I was right at the time, it was their certification. But
they should defend it.
They should defend it. That was their decision, not my decision. I only applied for it. So they defended it all right, and they won it.
Just the last question, which is, what were you? You were a business agent? Or?
I was organizer and business agent. I've served in all locals. I've served in, from the 40s, I've served in Local 28. I served as a trustee in Local 28. I was president of the Bartenders Union for over 25, 30 years. I was active as an first international organizer for the town restaurant. I operated in the Westminster area and all the interior. And I've sat on, I've been BC Federation of Labor, sat on the Port Maritime Council. I represented both liquor inquiries, the Harry Stevens and the Judge Morrow.
Mm-hmm.
I made the presentation on both liquor inquiries. And now I'm retired.
Okay. Great.